Chapter 57. Kurt put on more speed and adjusted the Griffin's course to the north. The mysterious radar contact reacted predictably, mirroring Kurt's course change and continuing to close the distance. Gamay came into the wheelhouse as Kurt straightened up. "What's with all the twists and turns?" "We've picked up a tail," Kurt said. "Faster than us?"
"Looks that way," Paul said.
Kurt pointed to the panel on Paul's left. "Check the cameras." Paul switched on the camera system, slaving it to the radar contact. The natural light spectrum was useless, since night had fallen. But the night vision lens clarified what they were looking at.
"Helicopters," Paul said. "Two of them. Right on the deck. They look military to me."
Kurt looked. Gun blisters underneath the nose were obvious, as were the lethal-looking missile pods on either side of the stubby wings.
"This is going to be rocky," Kurt said. "Time to break out our presence. Paul, you'd better man the surface-to-air launch panel. Gamay, you're the marksman of the group. You get on the CQW.
The two of them nodded, with Paul taking a seat behind and to the left, the controls for the missile panel in front of him, and Gamay right behind him, setting up behind another screen, with her hands on a joystick that would control the rapid-fire minigun Numa labeled close-quarters weapon.
"Range 4 miles and closing," Paul said. "We can hit them in 30 seconds.
"We can't hit them until we know for sure they're not friendlies," Kurt said. "Aviators from plenty of different militaries sometimes practice mock attack runs on civilian vessels. I'd rather not blast them out of the sky or force them to practice evasive maneuvers they're not quite ready for."
"So we can't fire until fired upon," Gamay said. "Not sure I like the rules of this game."
3 miles, Paul said. Suddenly the radar scope went white, as if it were picking up 10,000 helicopters.
"They're jamming our radar," Paul said.
"Keep your eyes on the video display," Kurt said. "They can't jam that." Paul glanced at the monitor. The camera system had the ability to track ranges.
2 miles, according to the camera. Speed 140 knots, heading right for us.
Kurt let go of the throttle for a moment and pressed 2 buttons on the panel in front of him. The first was labeled foils. The second was labeled armor. From the wide aft section of the Griffin, a series of heavy plates moved forward, covering the windows and the vulnerable areas around the fuel tank. Meanwhile, beneath the vessel, a pair of wings deployed on thick hydraulic struts.
1 mile, Paul said.
The armor clinked into place as a flash on the screen told everyone they were under attack.
"Rockets," Paul said. "Unguided."
Kurt turned the wheel hard and shoved the throttle forward. The Griffin heaved over to starboard, picking up speed in the turn. The first wave of rockets hit behind and to port. A second wave was so far off that the explosion sounded only like distant thunder. With the hydrofoils fully extended, the turbine engine howling in full voice, the Griffin was passing 70 knots and hitting 80 before the helicopters reacted.
"They're turning and following," Paul said. "More rockets inbound."
This time, the spread of rockets hit much closer. The first 4 up ahead and the second wave were straddling the Griffin. One hit the water to the left, 2 to the right, a 4th slamming into the armor on the aft deck. The Griffin shuddered and surged from the impact, but emerged from the firestorm mostly unscathed. On board the lead helicopter, Alexander Vostoga couldn't believe what he was seeing.
"Direct hit," the gunner said.
"No effect," Vostoga said.
By now the helicopters had overshot the speeding boat. Vostoga looked out the window as it vanished behind them.
"Turn back and make another pass. We get nothing if that boat doesn't go down."
"It's heading north," the pilot of the second helicopter radioed.
"Speed 90 knots.
Vostoga shook his head. The boat was almost as fast as his helicopters.
"Close within 500 yards before you open fire," he ordered.
"Rockets or guns?"
"Both."
The Griffin was flying across the sea, but it could not escape the helicopters.
"They're coming in again," Paul said. "Staggered formation. One at our 6 o'clock, one farther off the port beam."
"You have my permission to fire," Kurt said. "About time," Gamay replied. She'd already switched her scope to infrared. Now she activated a targeting laser. The range, speed, and distance of the helicopter moving in from the port side were quickly logged and computed.
Just out of range, she said. Paul, radar is still jammed. There's no way for me to get a lock on them. The helicopter trailing them launched another spread of unguided rockets. Kurt weaved to starboard, but that set them on a direct line for the second helicopter, and it unleashed all eight of its remaining rockets. One hit the forward deck, sending a shockwave through the Griffin. A second hit low on the side of the hull, but the explosion was a glancing blow, and the hull maintained its integrity. The same could not be said for the ribbed Zodiac attached to the back deck. It was blasted to confetti when a third rocket hit. I've had enough of this, Kurt said. He cut the wheel again, this time turning hard directly toward the nearest helicopter. As the range closed, the lights on Gemme's screen flashed green, and she opened fire. Near the bow, lethal fire spat from an innocent-looking dome. Inside, a six-barreled Gatling gun unleashed 150 shells in 3 seconds. Half of these found their mark, and the helicopter was perforated from front to back. Both the pilot and the gunner were killed instantly, saving them from suffering in the explosion that followed. One down, Kurt said, one to go. The surviving helicopter crossed overhead, its own nose-mounted cannon rattling as it went. The Griffin took several hits, noted by bowl-shaped dents in the armored roof and wall. Hairline cracks that spread from each one told Kurt all he needed to know about the shape of the armor. We can't take much more of this, he said. Paul, radar is still jammed. I can't get a lock. Just aim and fire, Kurt said. Maybe we can scare him off. Paul checked the helicopter's position on the camera system. Target is to the south of us. Here goes nothing. He selected a section of the sky, set an arbitrary target point as near to the helicopter as possible, and launched a missile. It streaked from what looked like a supply locker on the side of the top deck. Kurt turned as soon as the missile fired. If the pilot took evasive maneuvers, he might get within Gamay's range. Watching the video screen, he saw the missile racing into the dark. It went nowhere near the attacking copter, but as Kurt had expected, the helicopter took an evasive course anyway. It turned to the right, setting itself up broadside to the Griffin. Gamay opened fire, holding the trigger button down and filling the sky. The Griffin raced under the helicopter, which continued past and then turned to come back once more. What do we have to do to get rid of this guy? Kurt said. Radar is up, Paul said. You must have hit something. On screen, the helicopter's nose turret began flashing. More dents appeared, and the panel guarding the left window was torn away. Glass blew into the wheelhouse. Kurt and Gemme ducked, but Paul was locked in, and so was the radar. He fired a second missile as the helicopter flew past. This one tracked it, turned, and scored a direct hit on the engine compartment. The helicopter burst into flames and spiraled into the sea. Nice work, Kurt said. Are we clear? Gemme asked. Paul looked at the radar scope. Clear, he said, turning toward them. He had blood coming down the side of his face where shattered glass had hit him, and his hair was whipping in the breeze. Kurt backed off the throttle, let the Griffin level off. A search for survivors proved fruitless, and with the distinct possibility that they might be attacked again foremost in everyone's mind, Kurt powered up and took the Griffin west with the night.